So thank you for attending our session this morning. I had to flip the page over. This is session 318, titled Relational Trajectories of Ex-LDS Children and Their Active LDS Parents. Before we begin, we have a few announcements. We ask that cell phones are turned off and that those attending will be respectful and attentive. At Sunstone, we are making a goal to build a community that allows many people many ways to express their faith. Our recent tagline is, "There is more than one way to Mormon." We invite you to help us build a community where all paths are given space to be better understood. What this means is we all get to practice feeling challenged. At this conference, you might hear things that you agree with, things that inspire you, and things that help you grow. You may also hear things that will challenge you. Growth can be experienced in many ways. As you go through the conference and encounter ideas all over the spectrum of belief, we invite you to employ empathy as your standard of engagement. We are so very pleased that you have decided to join us at this conference. We hope you enjoy this session and the sessions to come. This session is being recorded, and you will be able to purchase it after the presentation ends at the registration desk on the main floor. If you haven't already, please consider subscribing to Sunstone Magazine at the registration desk as well. Your support goes directly to keeping the symposium and 40 years of thoughtful dialogue alive and sustainable. Don't forget to check out the bookstore in the ballroom hosted by Benchmark Books. Consider purchasing a book or two to support Mormon studies and scholars. This session will be 60 minutes long, and we ask both audience and presenters to keep within the framework of that time so we can allow the session to start on time. As you can see from your program, this presentation description is as follows. Ex-LDS individuals face a unique and perhaps a turbulent time in their relationship with their parent if the individual decides to leave the LDS church. To explore this phenomenon, we have proposed the following questions. What turning points exist within relationships of ex-LDS children and their active LDS parent? And what trajectories occur in relationships of the ex-LDS children? That's a repeat of the sentence. So in part of this, 30 participants were interviewed using a quantitative research method, the retrospective interview technique, otherwise known as RIT. Through turning point analysis, an analysis component of RIT, we identified 155 turning points and 9 relationship trajectories. Jared Warwood, our presenter, has a BA in Communication Studies at Utah State University and was recently accepted into the Communication Studies Master Program at Illinois State University. He is a research assistant in the Family Communication and Relationships Lab. As indicated earlier, this session is being recorded, so the presenter will provide opportunities for responses or questions from the audience. When we do that, we want to make sure that we have a mic at hand to do that, and I will provide that to you. So, Jared.
So it's been a while since I wrote that abstract, and it's a bit jargony. Basically, what my whole thesis was on my senior year at Utah State University was looking at what happens within the relationships of ex-LDS children and their active LDS parents. So turning points, we'll get into that, and trajectories, we'll kind of explain that as it goes on. So to start off, I'd like to ask a couple of questions. So first, what do we expect generally from our parents? So just feel free to raise your hand.
We want them to take care of us.
We want them to support us and accept us.
I feel like my answers were taken. I was going to say love, acceptance, and, you know, food, shelter, guidance.
Yeah. The basic needs, yeah.
And also expect to have guidance and example And I always felt in a way that parents give their children fences that protect them from many things, hopefully. Yeah. One of my daughters told our family, she said, Mother, you gave us roots and Dad gave us wings.
Awesome. Thank you so much for sharing that. Yeah, those are great answers. I just want to kind of give us a common ground to understand like how we view family relationships. So the next question is kind of similar. What do we expect from our kids or children in general that we have?
We expect them to push boundaries. We hope that they will appreciate us as they get older and love us, but I think we expect challenging situations.
We expect them to be obedient, that we want them to mind us when we say do this or do that or give them we have to teach them responsibility and we want them to accept it.
Yeah. Yeah, all those are excellent answers. And it kind of gives us great view into, all right, so we expect kids to be obedient, to respect their parents, and we expect parents to give guidance and support to their children, right? So what happens when the guidance of a parent is either ignored or the children decides to take another route? So that's kind of the setup of my research. And the way I came to this happened back in 2015. I was about a year into my LDS mission in Uruguay when my mom wrote me saying I decided to leave the LDS church, and this put me in this feeling of insecurity. As you guys mentioned, I expected a lot of guidance. I had been living according to what my parents had been teaching me for all these years. Much of my faith came from their own testimonies, and so to have my mom say that was kind of crazy, especially at this time where I was on my mission. I was sharing my testimony, and I kind of had to really question, like, who are my parents now that we don't have the shared context of faith? What's my relationship to them? And it made me really think, like, how do I know that? And I was really scared to meet them. Maybe they'd be completely different people. I didn't know. And eventually, when my parents came to pick me up on my mission, I was super nervous. But within the same day, I kind of realized, you know, my parents are the same people I always knew. Even though that they'd left the church and no longer shared the same faith, they were still proud of what I had done on my mission. They still loved me. They still supported me. And they'd kind of told me the story of what was happening back at home, where their own families were kind of going through the same insecurities of not knowing who they were anymore, of being unsure of their relationships with my parents, especially my mom and her two parents. They had kind of a hard time communicating about their beliefs and the new changes in their relationship. So that's kind of how I had the idea to study what happens in the relationship. What does that look like? Why all of a sudden these families that have been together for decades all of a sudden feel like they don't know each other, right? So to first look into that, what does leaving the church look like? So first of all, it looks different for everybody, but according to research, it's a time of insecurity, of crisis, of asking questions that you've never asked before, but also of empowerment, feeling new responsibility for your morality, feeling like you have control of your fate. And so at the same time, when you're going through what many call a faith crisis, you lose a lot of your old community. Leaving the LDS church, you're no longer going towards church every Sunday. There's a lot of community activities within the LDS church, like mutual stake activities. The ward gets together a lot, so you lose that community, along with family activities, like family home evening, missionary homecomings and farewells, baby blessings, all of these family activities that are very common in LDS families. You kind of lose that when you leave the church, right? So I think that's kind of the start of how we begin to perceive our family members that have left the church in different ways, right? So to kind of show that, it's a panda, right? We can pretty easily see that, but there are some lines missing, right? So I like to look at this as our perception. We see people as behaviors, as conversations, and we kind of get an idea of what they look like, right? And we kind of have to guess at the rest of it, right? So just last night, we were at a musical, watching one of my cousins perform, and when we got outside of the musical and were waiting for them, they never showed. And my family started kind of saying, oh, what if he just doesn't want to come see us? What if, like, we came all this way? Why is he spurning us? And it wasn't until after we left the after the musical, we like contacted my cousin. He said, "I'm so sorry. I was busy. I was undressing. I was taking down set." And you kind of see that we tell ourselves stories to fill in those gaps that aren't necessarily true. So just to kind of give you, I mean, this is communication theory, basically, is that perceptions only give you so much of the story, and then we rely on the stories we tell ourselves to understand other people, right? So what happens when we no longer recognize the shapes, right? So these are the same shapes from the panda, just split apart, right? So the same things are there. So let's say the person is demonstrating the same behavior, but we no longer understand how to perceive them. When someone leaves the church, this often happens because maybe they have some of the same attributes, but we no longer see them in this faith box. So we don't know how to make sense of their behaviors or who they are. So we rely on cultural narratives to tell us how to make sense, what to expect from these people, right? It's kind of like walking into a classroom for the first time. You don't really know your teacher, but you know they're a teacher, so you act like you would as a student, right? We respect them, we listen, we fall into roles, and we rely on cultural narratives to tell us how to act and what to believe about people. So when you look at church narratives about children who have left the church, this narrative kind of prodigal children comes up. They've left the path. We've provided the safe boundary, as people have said before. We want them to obey. We love them. We want to support them. And they've seemingly left that, right? So the story of the prodigal son in the New Testament is about a father who gave his two sons an inheritance. And one of them took that inheritance and went, and as the scripture says, went to a far country and wasted his substance with riotous living. And I think this is a very common narrative as we see our children leave the church that we think, they're being selfish, they're being lazy, they just want to party, they want to have an easy way out and not live by the rules. You can see this in modern day. Elder Bednar recently quoted Orson F. Whitney, who said, they will have to pay, talking about children who have left the church, they will have to pay their debt to justice. They will suffer for their sins and may tread a thorny path. But if it leads them at last, like the penitent prodigal, to a loving and forgiving father's heart and home, the painful experience will not have been in vain. Pray for your careless and disobedient children. So you can kind of see that it's mixed with this narrative of we're loving families, we want to welcome them back into the fold, but you can kind of see some very negative language of how we see them in the first place. We don't see them as themselves, we see them as disobedient and careless, right? So to kind of demonstrate how this impacts communication between parent and children, I've kind of drawn this Venn diagram, right? So on the right side, you have the parent's perception of what's going on and of the world, and the child's perception. And perception is made up of several things, but I've boiled it down to these five components: identity, past, values, culture, and beliefs, right? And this shared perception is kind of the easy, how they see the world the same, and it makes communication very easy, right? So what happens when all of those things start to shift? Let's see. That space gets smaller, right? So has anyone unfriended? But the interesting thing is that it's tricky with parents and children, right? So do people have Facebook here or social media? Has anyone unfriended someone who says something they don't agree with by the raise of hand? Right? It's pretty common to do. Has anyone unfriended an uncle or an aunt or a cousin that kind of doesn't share it? So it's semi-less common, but it happens. Has anyone unfriended a child or a parent for saying something that they don't agree with? Yeah, it doesn't happen. We have these narratives of parent-child relationships that they're permanent and we stick with them. And it would be a big cultural offense to unfriend a parent or a child on social media or kind of cut off connection in general with them. And so that's one interesting phenomenon with parent-child relationships. When someone leaves the church, just normally, because of that shift in values, identity, culture, that would be like warning for kind of cutting someone off, right? We don't talk to them because we just don't share a perception. But that doesn't happen with parents and children. And so that's kind of why I was like, let's look at that. What does that process look like? So to do that, I turned to a communication research method called turning point analysis. And basically what a turning point is any communication event where it kind of, it's like a touch point. What's happening in our relationship? What do we mean to each other? What is our relation right now? So as you can see on this graph, it's a point in time. It could be like a phone call, an interaction. It could be nonverbal, where people are like, oh, this is what my relationship to this person is. That's what a turning point is. A trajectory is a collection of turning points, and when you connect them, you can start to see a path, right? So this is kind of the overall relationship that they have with their parent over time. So we took... Yeah, so a turning point is a single event where someone understands the relationship with someone else. It's a communication event. A trajectory is a collection of turning points, right, that lets you see over time a pattern of the relationship. It lets you see that relationships are fluid, right? I may be close with my parent 1 year and distant with them another. They're always changing depending on these turning points. Does that work? Awesome. So we ask the following questions. What turning points exist in these relationships when someone leaves the church, and what trajectories emerge between children and their parents? And we asked these. We interviewed XLDS children specifically. So I won't get too deep into it, but basically we asked people from 18 to 30. We pulled individuals between the ages of 18 and 30 who had been raised LDS, who no longer identified as LDS, and had at least one parent that was active and had a conversation with them about their new belief system, right? So, again, if you have questions about this, I just kind of include this so we can reference it back if you have any questions about demographics. But it was mostly white because we sampled in the United States, and the church here is predominantly Caucasian. 10 identified as men, 19 identified as women, and one individual identified as agender in the sample. So what we did was we pulled each of these individuals in for an interview, we gave them this graph, and we said, all right, starting from the first time that you had a conversation with your parent about leaving the church, or that came into play in your relationship, graph out the pattern, right? So you can see our Y bar, this left side, the height, is the closeness to parent, right? How close did you feel with your parent at this given turning point? And so from that, we analyzed and categorized each turning point and came up with categorizations of trajectories or relational paths that they drew. So in the end, after analysis, we came up with 14 turning points. Overall, there was 155 turning points that people marked down, but we boiled them down into 14 main ones. And Kimber, if you want to pass out that handout. So in this handout, we've got the specific ones. And again, during the Q&A, feel free to ask me about specific ones. For right now, I'm going to go over three that I thought were particularly important in these paths. We won't go over each of them. So the first turning point we're going to talk about is parent interference. So this happened anytime a child perceived their parent to do something kind of aggressive or violated their privacy. So anytime someone read their journal or told them that they had to go to church, that was kind of seen as parental interference. So this is an exemplar pulled from one of the interviews we had. She made the rule that I either went to church or I paid rent, or I moved out. And I couldn't move out because I didn't have a job, and I couldn't pay rent because I didn't have a job. So my only option was to go to church or be homeless, and having my young kid, my young baby, I like church much more than being homeless, and so I just tolerated going to church. So these were marked particularly low. If you see like the overall trajectories, these were correlated with feelings of like distance. So for the most part, that it was not a... It didn't help parental closeness from the point of view of the child. The next turning point, verbal boundary setting, happened when children verbally said, you know, here are the rules of our relationship, right? They sat down with their parent, they said, I'm okay talking about this, I'm not okay talking about this. So in this turning point, or in this exemplar, he says, I just set boundaries. And I just said, I'm not going to bring up religion or politics. And if you want to talk about it, I'm always open to talk about whatever. But I'm not going to bring it up because I don't think that's very helpful to our relationship. So yeah, I just set that boundary, and after that, things were pretty decent. And that was kind of seen throughout the research when people said, you know, I had to sit down and say, you know, I love you, here are my boundaries, this is what we can talk about, this is what we can't. Most participants said that this was correlated with, I felt closer to my parent, I felt like I was more welcome in the home, or I felt safer going to be with my parents because I'd set this boundary and they respected them. So that was one of the things we saw. The final turning point we're going to talk about is parent realizations. These happened when parents were able to take the perspectives of the kid, like, oh, like, I maybe don't agree with you, but I understand what you're going through, or I understand that this might be hard, or I love you no matter what. So in this exemplar, the participant expresses about his mom. She didn't say this specifically. The takeaway I got from the conversation was like, hey, I might not understand the exact problems you're going through, but I've been there emotionally, basically. So you can see in this exemplar how the participant expressed, you know, it wasn't even really explicitly said, but he felt like his mother was trying to take his perspective and really understand the struggle that he was going through. So this was also correlated with really high feelings of closeness. Moving on to the other side of the paper, we're going to go over trajectories. Again, I'm only going to go over two to kind of give you an idea of what they look like. But again, so this was a collection of turning points and the overall path. And so we had eight categories emerge from the data. So the first one we're going through is reconciliation, which kind of looks like a V, right? So this first turning point occurred when usually parents or children would express to their parents, you know, I don't identify with the teachings of the LDS Church, or I'm no longer going. And it took it to around 50-60% closeness, feelings of closeness. Then a lot of times the second lowest turning point was that re-clarifying conversation of, you know, you may think I'm still coming back, I'm not, I'm fully out, I'm different, I no longer identify, and I'm not changing how I view the LDS Church. And so that was when a lot of times relationships took a big dip in feelings of closeness. And then other turning points occurred that kind of slowly raised feelings of closeness. So this could be boundary setting, parent realizations, as we've gone over before. But one interesting thing about this trajectory is that a lot of people who drew this trajectory expressed feeling, you know, like, we're better now than we were, but we'll never be as close as we were before I left the church. I just don't feel like we share that context anymore. We can't communicate the same way, right? So even though it's going up, a lot of people expressed it's never going to be the same as it was. The next trajectory is called negative turbulent, basically high highs, low lows, eventually terminating in a really low turning point where individual said, I don't see this getting any better. It's been kind of crazy. I think it's going to stay how it is. So there would be like points where they felt, you know, my parent gets it, my parent understands, and I feel close to them, followed by events where they're like, you know, I was wrong. Either they forgot what we talked about or they still have feelings of pain about it, and communication is still hard. So those were the results of the research that we did and the interviews that we did. So what does that mean for us, right? Well, first we can see family boundaries are important. Current research right now talks about how a lot of children enact boundaries like secret keeping or keeping a journal and not sharing things with their parents to separate, right? To kind of become adults, to have independence. But this research shows that, you know, a lot of times boundary setting is how we maintain relationships that are difficult. Secondly, unconditional love was a big theme. As soon as participants expressed, you know, they said they love me no matter what. Maybe they didn't agree with me. Maybe they're still worried about me, but they still were there for me. Despite disagreement, that showed like they still felt close to their parents. Finally, it shows just how fluid relationships can be. That just because someone's at a really low point right now or like they don't feel close to their parent right now, maybe in a couple years or with a couple more events and interactions, it could be better or it could go down. They're just always changing. So I think overall, looking at the results of my research and also kind of doing some back research on church narratives, it looks like there's this hard disconnect where the church is so family-centered and can be so rewarding, right? When people are active, we're always doing family activities together, right? There's doctrine within the LDS Church that families are together forever and that family is our purpose here on earth, and that can be so rewarding. But at the same time, when children leave the church, it kind of is a big barrier to them feeling close again, right? A lot of participants said, you know, I feel like my parents are choosing the church over me, and I don't know how to reconcile that. So in conclusion, I would just recommend that all of us rewrite our own narratives with those that we love and try to fill in those gaps with how they communicate to us instead of relying on cultural narratives to tell us how to perceive our most loved. Because if we rely on cultural narratives, I think that we can feel more distant with our parents and children. So thank you. And so now I've got time for questions. Feel free to ask me about any turning point that there are. So.
So I'd really like it if you kind of hit that last conclusion a little more. You said, I thought that was really cool when you said we need to consider rewriting our personal narratives in light of, instead of just taking our cultural narratives. Could you expand upon that a little bit more?
Yeah, so as we talked about in the beginning of the presentation, there's this narrative of prodigal children, how they're lazy, or a lot of times looking through a lot of conference talks, they're characterized as sinful and ignorant. And so if we just take that and say, oh, all people who have left the children left the church are sinful and ignorant, that really is going to impede how we communicate with our own children. And so I think that if you can, instead of relying on that, rely on your own interactions with someone and really listen instead of listening through a filter of that narrative, I think that is going to be more productive in having a close relationship with your child or parent.
I was curious if you had ever looked at anything with the side of where the parents have left rather than the child and how that has affected how the children then grow up.
I think that's fascinating. That was actually my own experience. That's how I kind of started on all of this, was my parents leaving the church and feeling like, all right, where am I now? What does that all mean? I think that due to time constraints, this was my senior thesis, that getting a sample like that would maybe be a bit complicated, but I definitely want to do that research. So yeah, thank you. I think that's would be an amazing question to ask in research, yeah. Any other questions? Any other like trajectories that you want to like hear about or turning points from the handout?
What did you see as the top three or four most common turning points?
Right. So one of the ones I didn't include is discussions of values and belief. That, I mean, that was kind of, obviously that would be the most common because that was kind of part of our requirements to participate. I was surprised, however, that there was three subtypes in it, which was people saying, basically, so what that turning point is people saying, this is what I believe, this is what I value. And so the three subtypes would be one person saying, I have doubts, another person saying, like, they would argue about doctrine, bring up church history, and finally, people saying, you know, I no longer believe in the church. So that was by far the most common. I think the next one was moving out. Because of the age sample, 18 to 30, a lot of people talked about going to college or coming back for family events. So moving out to college was interesting because, or just moving out in general was interesting because sometimes it was very positive, you know. I kind of got to follow my own rules. My parents weren't, like, looking in on what I was doing the whole time. But other people expressed that it could be negative because they're like, I didn't interact with my parents as much, so I didn't have as many opportunities to maintain a good relationship with them.
So my question is, you've done this research on the trajectories. Have you noticed any patterns? I'm trying to figure out how to phrase this. The kids that have left the church and have parents that are still active, other than setting boundaries, have you found any patterns that there are things in their control that helps them have a more positive trajectory with their parents, or is it all up to the parent?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think that in this context, I tended to put a little bit more responsibility on the parent, just because that was the perspective of children, so that might have been a bias that the research had. One thing that was expressed that my research question didn't encompass, so I didn't include it in my thesis, was that we asked, you know, what advice would you give to other people in similar situations, and they all said, I wish I wasn't as belligerent. I wish I would have been more calm when I talked to my parents about this. They all expressed, you know, I was so concerned with being right that even though I still believe what I believe, I wish that I would have been better in my interactions with my parents and been able to understand that it was a painful experience for them. While that's their recommendation, it might be tricky because I think that you're going through so much when you leave the church that you feel like you're losing so much to have that perspective of, you know, this me being an active member of the church is a big part of my parents' identity. I don't know if people have that perspective, but that was the advice they gave, was understand your parents' point of view better and come at it from a calmer standpoint. Oh, Sister Busk, I think you've been raising your hand.
Yes. Did you find that in the people that you discussed with, that they expected their parents to be more tolerant of their decisions and their choices than they extended tolerance to their parents about their decisions and choices? Was there a difference? Of course, you didn't interview the parents.
Right, that wasn't one of the questions that I asked participants. I think, I mean, that, I guess that would be the next research project, is to interview the parents. I think that the anger of the kids isn't so much at the parents as much as it is as at the church for how they feel like the results happened, and maybe disappointment that the parents, that they feel like their parents love the church more than they love them. As far as allowances, I really my research didn't really encompass that, so I don't know if I feel comfortable giving you an answer to that.
You had turning point number 11 coming out. Was sexuality or gender identity a common turning point in relationships?
Yeah, and that actually came up in 2 points. There's coming out, and there's also sibling events. And so people would say that either that coming out of their own, whether they were homosexual or somewhere on the queer spectrum, or their sibling was, really impacted the way they saw their own parents, where they felt like, am I accepted, and how their parent kept on expecting them to change or come back. Can you repeat the question one more time? Sorry.
Just, was that a common turning point?
Yeah, it was very common.
The other question I have is on the trajectories. You have the metric on the y-axis of closeness and on the x-axis time. Over what period of time were these trajectories measured?
Yeah, it was actually quite a range. It went from anywhere from 2 months where someone had recently left the church or recently had doubts to over the span of 10 years. So, I mean, it could have started before they were 18, you know, and gone until they were 30. So that was kind of the max amount. But, anywhere from 2 months to, I think, 10 years was the longest span.
So, Jared, on those relational trajectories, have there been studies similar to this that you could that are comparable to this? Like you're saying, this is how it is in families without religious conflicts, or not?
A lot of studies using turning point, like I did over like a lifespan of like, what does it look like over the lifespan? What does it look like when they move to college? This was interesting because it was kind of like more of about a conflict point of, instead of doing something that was with the norm, going to college, leaving the church is kind of against the norm, so we kind of expected more conflict. And so no one has really done it this way, so this was kind of like a pilot study into that area. In fact, a big movement of family communication studies is to study how culture influences family rather than just how family communication works. And so this was really interesting because we don't think of culture as something you can just exit. Right? We think of being American as something you're just stuck in no matter where you go, no matter where you stay, no matter what you believe. If you're born in America, you're American. Whereas you can leave the LDS church, even though that's a huge cultural thing. And so this was kind of a pilot study into, like, what does that exit look like on families?
So just looking at the different types of relational trajectories, it looks like most of them ended up on a positive note. Did the majority of people you talked to fit into those more positive categories?
Because it's qualitative analysis, like quantities don't really matter. This was more just looking at what came up. So had I had a sample of 200 people and interviewed them, maybe I could make generalizations of this is the most, but that just wasn't what we were looking at. I just wanted to get an idea of what were the patterns that they took. So I'd say that commonality doesn't really matter. Just understanding that those types of trajectories exist is the important takeaway.
Yes, even though when they were together, maybe they didn't have an open conflict, you know, or they'd agreed not to discuss religion or relationships or whatever. Did they express a sense of, I don't know, tension or pretense or... Well, I think we all know in relationships they can be genuine or they can be controlled for the situation. Did they express anything about that?
Yeah, oh, that came up all the time. Like just in one of the exemplars I shared, she said, you know, I went to church to please my mom so I could stay. I felt like I had to. Or sometimes people would enact behaviors just to maintain the relationship. We had people saying, you know, I didn't really know how to talk to my parents about that I didn't want to get married in the temple, so I just told him I was getting married into the temple until the month before when I said, you know, this isn't my thing. Yeah, that was a big one. Another turning point similar to that, or not a turning point, but another interview similar to that was people going to church or people telling the parents, yeah, I still go to church when they really weren't. Things like that happened a lot, but in their head, they were trying to stay close to their parents, but when they rated themselves, they didn't feel super close because they felt like they had to pretend.
I understand this is a qualitative study, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the determination of closeness was basically the interviewee's perception of closeness. Have you thought about ways of actually quantifying closeness, such as, you know, amount of time spent together or conversations or querying both the parent and the child or other ways of quantifying closeness for future study?
Yeah, there's definitely scales and survey formats that have items that measure closeness. Because we were more concerned with the stories they were telling and kind of what happened in that turning point and the overall story of their relationship, we didn't do it quantitatively. But you're right, like 70% for me might look different for 70% closeness with someone else. That effect on me might be different, but I think there is value in seeing how people perceive their overall relationship.
I think that sometimes your perception of closeness depends on how close you are to the turning point. That as time goes on, maybe your perception of closeness changes, which may ultimately change the trajectory.
Yeah, no, that's a great observation. This is retrospective. And so there's definitely, when people are recalling, maybe the points in the beginning aren't as painful. And so they're like, oh, we feel closer. Yeah, that's definitely a limitation to the study.
So I realize that this was research and that you've been really careful as a researcher on what you present. Since there still seems to be quite a bit of time, would you be interested in sharing some of your personal observations or how you went into this study from a very personal perspective? Would you be willing to share a little bit about how your study affected you personally?
What?
I was just laughing if you said, no, I'm not willing.
Yeah. I think I was really touched in each interview with how much people wanted to stay close with their parents. One thing that we see, and we talked about it earlier, is that you kind of feel like parent-child relationships are there forever. You know, no matter where you come from in the culture, whether you're raised LDS or outside of the church, we see family as permanent. And so we do what we can to maintain those relationships because we expect, as we talked about in the beginning, the rewards of guidance and support and acceptance. And so it was really heart-wrenching to see that whether it was just their perception, the child's perception of their parent or reality, that they felt because of them trying to stick true to who they thought they were and what they believed, they were no longer accepted by their parents for that. Whether that was true or not, I mean, it's perception like we talked about, but that was their perception that I've chosen this belief and I want to stay close to my parents, but they don't accept me. They don't support me for who I am. That was really difficult to see. And I would love to do a study the other way, you know, interviewing parents who their children have left the church, because I'm sure that there's a lot of pain similar to that as well. I think that was the biggest impact, is seeing, you know, how hard it is to, you know, if anyone else said similar things like, I'm going to kick you out of my house if you don't go to church, and it wasn't my parent, then I would move out or I'd find someone else. But because of the discourses we have in society that, like, they're your parent no matter what, no matter how they treat you, no matter who they are, or they're your kid no matter what, no matter what they do, it's really tricky when those relationships become very painful. So that's why that's why I wanted to look into that.
Wouldn't the situation also be colored by the fact of if they were close in other ways other than religion? So they like to go hunting together, or they like to play golf together, or they enjoyed classical music, or they like to go to musicals or read certain books, not religious books. And did you have any hints about that, where they were coming from other than their religious orientation?
Yeah, that's a wonderful question. That was actually one of my biggest concerns going into the study, is like, what if this is just one turning point where they had one conversation, didn't go, like, maybe it went well or didn't go well, but after that, their relationship really wasn't defined like that. But one thing that really surprised me was that every single person I interviewed, even when they talked about, you know, we tried to go to this place, like, everything was colored, because the LDS Church is so involved and incorporated into everyday life and our family identity. People would say, you know, we had to come together over other interests, like, we'll talk about sports, we'll go to a sports game, but it was very colored by, you know, we do this because we can't do these things that we used to do to stay close. That was really surprising to me. So that was, yeah, a wonderful question. Grandma?
On number 7, you talk about siblings. And did you go into that much? I mean, it's big with parents. But what about siblings? Does it tear the family apart? How do you keep close with your siblings?
Yeah, siblings played a really interesting role in these relationships, because on one hand, the people we were interviewing were comparing their parents' treatment of them with their parents' treatment of their siblings, right? Are they treating me better because of certain things? Or are they treating me worse because of certain things? And also, siblings played a function of kind of being ambassadors, right? Either for good or for bad, right? Either if they were still active, a lot of times they act as this intermediary of, like, you know, Mom, you should be easier on John. He's left the church, but that doesn't mean he's different. They were kind of this trusted ambassador by both parties, where the individual who had left the church was like, they get where I'm at, and their parent was like, oh, they're still active in the church, so I can trust what they're saying about their siblings. So they performed that, or sometimes they would reveal things about their, like, siblings would reveal things about the individual leaving the church that they didn't want revealed to their parents. So they were very polarizing. Either they were super good and super helpful in the relationship, or they were super unhelpful.
So now that you've completed your senior thesis, you've published, you've presented, looking back, would you have done anything differently, or like to have done anything differently with this study?
Yeah, that's a great question. Let me go back to these. So one thing I noticed after was that we started the questioning, like, tell us how close you felt the first time you felt like leaving the church, or your differentiating views influenced the relationships. I would have liked to go a step back, right? Tell us about the point right before, right? Because as you can see, you know, if you look at this turning point as it is, it's like, oh, they're super close. That's, like, not far. But they were always talking about the point before this, right? So that first turning point is actually lower than they were actually feeling before they left the church. So that's something I would have changed, is I would have asked about, how are you feeling? Or, like, mark how you were feeling right before.
I have a question and a follow-up question. Yeah. So how did you define, like, you call it a conflict point?
Turning point.
The very first turning point. Like, how did you define, this is the moment that I want you to start talking about? And I'm assuming that it was most of them when they decided to leave their church, or when they decided to tell their parents about leaving the church. And so my follow-up question with that is, did you find that those turning points were common? Like, did people leave for similar reasons, or did people have, what kind of reasons were you finding that people were leaving the church?
Yeah, so answering your first question, the wording of the interview protocol was, tell us about the first turning point where you felt like your differentiating views in the LDS church influenced your relationship with your parents. So usually it was a conversation. Sometimes it was nonverbal, of like, my parent expressed that they thought that homosexuality was a sin, and I didn't identify with that, and that started creating a rift. So sometimes it started earlier than them just leaving the church. Answering your second question, I wasn't really looking for, like, the common reason people were leaving the church. I don't know if that's a very valuable answer, because we have a sample of 30. But, I mean, it was a full spectrum of people, doctrine, policies, just lack of a testimony, stuff like that.
From your research, did you find that the parents' narrative, well, obviously, I guess that's what your research was about, but is one of the reasons there was a conflict that the parents thought the kids were leaving for a different reason than the kids thought the kids were leaving?
Yeah, I don't know about reasoning that they were leaving, but their perceptions of how far out of the church they were was very different. One of the questions we had at the end was, like, what is your perception? Like, how far apart is your perception of where you are in relations, like your feelings of the LDS church, and how, like, and where do you feel like your parents' perception of where you are is, right? So people would say, you know, I'm not that antagonistic towards the church, but as soon as I left the church, my parents think I'm anti-Mormon, and anything I say is to bash the church. So that happened a lot.
So that kind of, yeah, I want to flip that. You talked about the narratives with the prodigal son and that the children feel like that because they walk away from the belief that they're considered lazy or disobedient or whatever. On the other hand, is there any way that a child, I guess what I'm trying to ask you is, did you see things in your research that the child felt, sorry, is there any way that the child could help the parent not feel personally rejected? Did that come up? I know that would be more that the parents feel rejected, but in my own experience, it seemed like there's a mixture of when I step away from the church, that the family, that the parents feel personally rejected. Did you see any of that, or is that just a totally different research?
That leaving the church was felt as a personal attack by the parents?
Yeah, that.
Narrative is so well known, the prodigal son narrative, but is there a narrative, and you're talking about, here's the cultural narrative, is there an opposite narrative where the child walking away isn't rejecting the parent, just as rejecting the church, but that gets, that narrative gets put on it?
I don't know if I understand the question. From what I'm gathering, is there some story you can tell your parents that, like, look, I'm not rejecting you, I'm just rejecting the
Yeah,
church.
Where does that, okay, that's the question. Where does that narrative come? Why is that so much that if we walk away from a system of belief, we're rejecting our parents personally?
Yeah, so I think that narrative comes from a lot of things. Mainly, there's a lot of talks about, I mean, because the church is so family-centric, you have a lot of church talks, a lot of church leaders saying, your big purpose in life is raising kids that are active in the church. Your big purpose in life is making sure generations to come are active in the church. And if your child leaves, a lot of times you're like, it kind of promotes this dialogue. It's like, what have I done wrong? There used to be, I think a lot of apostles have gone far to clarify this, but there used to be this myth that if the parent was super active and kept their covenants, that their children would be automatically in. Putting a lot of responsibility on parents, that this is their job to get their parents into heaven. Parents getting their children into heaven, and so when their children are like, you know, this isn't our thing. And also eternal families, right? There's the narrative of no empty chairs. Our job is to get everybody to heaven and to the celestial kingdom. And so when someone opts out, you know, in my own family, like, the biggest thing we fight about is if someone doesn't want to be with the group, right? If we're all together and someone leaves, that's when we get mad at each other. And so I think that's just a common family communication thing, is we all want to be together. And so if someone leaves, we're going to be mad at it. It feels like a rejection. And so I think those narratives of, like, this isn't about you guys, this is about my spirituality, those conversations need to be created one-on-one. I don't think there's a societal narrative that really supports that.
I'm the moderator, so I normally don't ask questions,
please.
But we have some time. I don't come from the Brighamite tradition of the Restoration, but there was something you said that caused me to pause and wonder. You talked about children leaving the church and then no longer feeling welcome to attend things like a baby blessing. And if it's not a rejection of the family, I'm just curious, what is the dynamic there that makes that feel as a rejection?
Right, yeah. I think that a lot of families would say, yeah, come to this baby blessing, come to this homecoming, baptism, that spiritual event. I think that's more part of the individual leaving the church saying, you know, I don't feel comfortable there. Like, I think a lot of people leaving the church are still bitter and feel like there's in other ways they've been wrong, so they don't feel comfortable going to those things. I think a good example of that is temple marriages. You can only go in when you have a recommend, so you're like physically not allowed to come in, and so that feels like a barrier put up. So I don't think that's so much the family saying you can't come to these things as much as you no longer have that in your identity, so you just lose that.
Thank you.
Just to follow up on that question, I just want to share a personal experience. For me, I don't have a lot of bitterness towards the church, but going into church activities or to church events that are in the church or have stuff to do with the church, it reminds me how unhappy I was when I was there, and that's why I'm uncomfortable. It's not that I don't want to be with my family. It's that it puts me back in a mindset where I was unhappy and uncomfortable, and I don't want to experience that.
And from my personal experience, when I was going to church, I had mostly positive experiences there. So when I don't want to go to a church event, usually it's because I no longer know how to interact with the people in my new, kind of like that panda bear. Sometimes I have a hard time knowing how to perceive them and myself in this new lifestyle, and I don't know how to fill in the gaps with them. I'm not sure what they think about me anymore, if they're judging me, or if they're only happy I'm there because they're hoping I'll come back to church with me, knowing that's not what I want for my life. And so I just don't feel comfortable with relationships in that situation, because I don't know what ground I stand on with those people anymore. It's a different ballpark.
Sounds like you have to be careful the signals you're giving by even showing up.
Okay. Well, and I'll piggyback on that. You know, I went back to church during the Christmas season. They asked me to come and direct the choir. And I want to be able to come and be myself. And yet it's very hard because I love that community and I fit in. I will always feel LDS to my core in so many ways. But because my belief system has shifted, the cost is so high. When you're part of a group, you buy into, you all support the group. This is what we all believe. But when I was there to direct choir, and someone said, you know, come to my class, I'm teaching this particular thing. And I said, yeah, I don't know if I believe that. And that was a horrible thing for me to admit, because we all go to church, we all say we believe this. And so to have someone there, even if they welcome me there, they don't welcome all of me. And so I have said in the past, I'm giving you a gift by not being here, because by me not being here, you feel more cohesive than if I'm here bringing up the things that I disagree with. So I love the culture, but I can't bring all of myself there.
Another example of how that impacts family relationships. My grandpa's funeral, my mom went and said, we had it at a church. My mom went and shared her experiences and didn't close in the name of Jesus Christ, amen. And that directly impacted my family. All my extended family are like, why didn't she do that? You know, and so those kind of events where there's a assigned language to use, when you no longer feel comfortable using that language, it causes rifts and contention within your own family. So,
are there any other questions for our moderator? If not, we'd like to thank you, Jared, for presenting at Sunstone today. And we'd like to thank each of you.